Juan Guzman had supported General Augusto Pinochet's 1973 coup that toppled Salvador Allende, but when in 1998 Judge Guzman was assigned the first criminal cases against Pinochet, what he learned about the past shocked him and forced him to change his mind about the general's regime. He joins me now for today's Underreported, along with Elizabeth Farnsworth, director of a new documentary called The Judge and the General, which will air on PBS on Tuesday, August 19th at 10 p.m. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have to clear this up because in the film, everyone who speaks English says Pinochet, and everyone who speaks Spanish says Pinochet.
Yes.
What are we going to say during this conversation?
Well, I think Pinochet is the right pronunciation.
Elizabeth, before we get into the judge's story, can you give us a recap of what happened in Chile after he seized power?
After Pinochet.
The generals seized
yes,
power.
Yes, after General Pinochet seized power, he decided to, as somebody in the film says, outroot the communist cancer. He thought that what Allende, who was not a communist but was a member of a long-term Democratic Socialist Party, what he had wanted to do as a president, he was elected in 1970, was communist in nature. And so Pinochet and his secret police went after a lot of people who had been pro-Allende and had been in various political parties, and there was a lot of many arrests, disappearances, torture, and that's part of what the film's about.
Judge Guzman, what were you doing during the coup? Were you supporting it?
Well, actually, I had arrived from Spain the day before, the 10th of September, and I was with my parents in Viña del Mar. That's at the coast, about 120 miles from Santiago. And, well, my mother woke me up in the morning saying, thanks God, the Unidad Popular has finished. The soldiers have taken over power, and we're going to be now in a country where we won't have any longer communism. That was how she reacted. And a few moments later, I would say 11 o'clock in the morning, we toasted with champagne. And, a little bit later, that champagne grew sour in our mouth because we heard it that Salvador Allende had been killed or had suicided himself.
Well, the official line was that he had committed suicide, but Elizabeth, in the film, there is some audio of Pinochet pretty much ordering the death of Allende.
That's right.
He doesn't say it explicitly, but anybody listening to it would know. This was a secret military recording, not for public consumption. So people would not have known. How did you gain access to it?
Monica Gonzalez, who's a journalist who figures very importantly in our film, probably the bravest journalist in all my work around the world I've ever known, got that. Somebody in the military, they clearly pirated this. They were recording it, and they pirated it.
Because I'm sure some people were upset. Not everyone
that's right.
was happy about
Many
what
people
was
in the military were not happy. In fact, it's interesting when you talk to journalists in Chile, the disaffected generals who didn't like what Pinochet was doing gave them a lot of information.
What did they do at the time? Just simply go along?
I think so. I mean, that's what I'm so interested in. That's why I wanted to make this film. I'm interested in the people that go along, and then I'm interested in the people that don't.
Well, Judge Guzman, if you heard rumors of killings, of torture, how was that explained at the time?
At the time, we really thought that these were isolated situations produced by soldiers that got kind of mad. That was the explanation.
The bad apples we have in this country as well, in places like Abu Ghraib.
Sure. But as I was studying these cases, you know, as a judge in 1998 and after, well, I realized that it was systematic, that the killings were every day.
Well, but perhaps people were not paying attention because they didn't want to also.
In the beginning
of the film, there's a disturbing scene in which a woman in a crowd shouts along with other members of the crowd, "Communist faggots, they killed your relatives because they were losers." Mm-hmm. And that would suggest that for many people, even if they didn't necessarily know of just what was going on, they felt that it was necessary.
Well, many people, let's say our fundamentalists, did think it was necessary and that to kill a communist was a good deed. But The truth was the biggest part of our population could not believe that what was really happening. You had to be either a victim, or you had to be a soldier or somebody that was mingled up with all this thing.
Didn't your family know Allende?
Yes, my mother and father had met him in many occasions, especially in Paulo Neruda's home. And
they consider him a class traitor?
No, not at all. They admired him because he was a real learned man and a good politician. No, we were much more broad opened, mentally open in those times than now. Now people are very much polarized.
Well, your father was a famous poet, just like Pablo Neruda. Is that why they were friends?
Let's say I'm going to speak in Chilean terms. What we call Chilean society would have been the learned people or the rich people, and my dad was among the learned people, and then learned people all knew themselves. It was a small country.
Now, Elizabeth, you were in Chile during the early 1970s, weren't you? What
Yes.
were you doing there?
I went to Chile. I got a degree, a master's degree in Latin American history, and I pretty quickly realized I didn't want to be an academic, although I admired academics, and became a journalist. And in 1970, I was hired. I was young, and I was hired as an assistant producer on a film. It was a documentary feature film, sort of like Haskell Wexler's Medium Cool. Saul Landau was one of the producers, and he and Haskell had worked a lot together. They made a film about Fidel Castro together, for example. Country Joe McDonald did the music. It was a wild scene. There were about 12 or 15 of us in a house. We went to Santiago. We were there during the election and the period between the election of Allende and the inauguration. And you probably remember that that's when the U.S. spent a lot of money to try to prevent the inauguration.
In fact, we have a clip of President Nixon talking about Allende.
An Italian businessman came to call on me in the Oval Office. And he said, if Allende should win the election in Chile, and then you have Castro in Cuba, what you will in effect have in Latin America is a red sandwich. And eventually, it'll all be red.
A little clip from a film called The Judge and the General, which will be airing on PBS on Tuesday, August 19th at 10 p.m. With me are the filmmaker and also the subject of this film, Elizabeth Farnsworth, and Judge Juan Guzman. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Judge Guzman, when you were assigned to the criminal court cases against Pinochet, some of the defendants felt that they had pulled a judge who might be too conservative to be unbiased.
Yes.
Were they right about you at that moment?
Well, I continue to be conservative, but I'm not a right-wing judge, as many people thought. I'm conservative in traditions, in wanting the indigenous people to continue having their lands and their traditions and all that. I believed very much in our Catholic religion. Now I have hundreds of doubts. But I think I was a good professional. I never thought that you had to be this way or that way to be a good judge.
How soon after Pinochet was eliminated from the presidency, stepped down from the presidency, did these cases appear before you?
Well, I was a very young judge in misdemeanor cases, and I did some substitute jobs at higher courts. And there I realized that there had been lots of killing. And there I started realizing that this was not so mild as we were told it was.
But you, the case was...
It was 10 years, I think, wasn't it, Juan? No. Between 88 and 98. He left in 88 and then Juan got the
case.
And
were things already coming out at that time? Were people becoming more and more aware of what had happened during the Pinochet years?
People became aware little by little over all the years. Because, I mean, once Letelier, Orlando Letelier, the former ambassador to the United States, was blown up by the Chilean secret police in
Washington,
D.C., and the FBI, after originally doubting that Pinochet had done it, got on the case. They did a lot of really good work that started to reveal this, but many people in Chile didn't believe it. And even if you did, or even if you knew something, to really pursue these cases against the obstacles that Judge Guzman had was almost impossible. And you and to be somebody who was conservative and had supported the coup, the human rights lawyers never dreamed that he would do this. Isn't that right?
That's right.
They really were skeptical.
Mm-hmm. Now, a judge in the Chilean system, which is similar to the French and Italian system, has a very different role than an American judge. You investigate the case, and you also are the prosecutor to some degree, aren't you?
That's right. I was the investigating judge and the prosecutor. I indicted, for example, Pinochet 3 times, and I indicted at least some 80 officers and other state agents. And afterwards, I should have had to try them in our ancient procedure. Now we have changed, fortunately. We have a system very close to your system, but without juries.
At one point in the film, you say that until you started working on these cases, you were living in a golden bubble.
That's true.
What was that golden bubble?
Well, not knowing or not wanting to know what really happened.
So was this a matter, I'm assuming, not wanting to know was not just something that was the case with you, but probably affected an awful lot of people. They didn't want to know because
yes.
They felt that they'd be upset if they found out?
Yes. Many people would have the sensation that they lived a false life for 17 years if they really knew what had happened.
Well, how much effort did the Pinochet regime take to cover up what they were doing? How much effort? I mean, did they work really hard to?
Oh, yeah. These were secret prisons, hidden. And, I mean, imagine being a mother. Your daughter's taken to a secret prison. For some reason, somebody in that prison is let out. Every once in a while, somebody did get let out. There was pressure or something. And this person says, your daughter is at José Domingo Cañas, this secret prison. And you can drive by it. But it's completely hidden from anybody. And it's denied by everybody in a position of power that anybody's there. Imagine being that parent.
But people just disappeared and never came back.
Yeah, they disappeared.
In some cases, in one of the cases that you investigated, Judge Guzman, it was the reason for the deaths of the prisoners was that they were in a van that overturned and they died. And you learned that they'd all been shot in the head.
Yes, I had to discover that because, a lady, the wife of one of these victims, told me actually that she had seen her husband with that had half of his head taken out, I mean blown out. And then naturally, that's not normal in a car accident. So I had to investigate, and there I realized that he had been killed by bullets and that this was just
cover-up.
A cover-up, yes.
Although in some cases, people were witnesses to the actual mm-hmm. atrocities, and for some reason, they were allowed to survive.
Sure.
I guess the feeling was that it wouldn't matter whatever they said. Nobody would believe them. There was so much respect for the military or fear. What recourse did the victims' families have in the 1970s and 80s and 90s? Were they trying to get justice for their missing and dead loved ones?
Yes. Yes. They
from the start?
Well, from the start, you know, our judicial system rejected more than 10,000 habeas corpus.
And you signed a fair number of those rejections.
No, I never signed one. I was a reporter or a clerk, and then told the story about the people being kidnapped to the judges, and the judges would dictate a decision, and I had to write that decision, but I never signed it. I never took any decision regarding it.
Well, what I meant was you were the one who wrote it up
and
put your name on the bottom.
They didn't put my name. They put their signatures, and that was the...
And so what's interesting about it is that then
they just rubber stamped whatever the government told them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I really wonder this. I haven't asked you this. Is it because they were terrified, do you think? Or did they just believe in it?
No, they didn't believe in it. They were really hard like rocks, you know. And they just wanted to either to make a career to get to the Supreme Court, or they hated communism and so badly that they just thought that it didn't matter if they were killed or not.
And you, at the end of the film, you have people who still supported Pinochet, even though they knew that all of these atrocities occurred. It didn't matter ultimately.
Yeah, I found it shocking because I was in and out of Chile all during the shooting for this over several years. My co-director, Patricio Lanfranco, covered everything for this period. And when I got to Chile the day after Pinochet died, it was amazing to see all these people in the street yelling these really terrible things, like the quote about communist faggots, we killed your relatives because they were losers. And it seemed like a lot of people. I think the polls show, though, that number of very sort of totally committed Pinochet supporters is not as large as it has been.
Is it typical in Chile to call somebody a faggot if you want to insult them?
It would be faggot or son of a bitch. Those would be the worst insults.
And communist, of course, was what they called anyone who disagreed with.
Yeah, communist and terrorist.
Yes, it's the same.
Beneath contempt.
We have to take a little break. We'll come back with more of today's Underreported, looking at a documentary of called The Judge and the General. The filmmaker, Elizabeth Farnsworth, is here, and also the subject of the film, Juan Guzman. The film will be airing on PBS on Tuesday, August 19th at 10 p.m. And we're back with Elizabeth Farnsworth and Judge Juan Guzman. He is the subject of a film called The Judge and the General, which airs on PBS on August 19th at 10 p.m. It'll also be screened tonight at 6:30 at the Film Society of Lincoln Center at West 65th Street between Broadway and Amsterdam Avenue. And if you want to find out more about that, tickets and more information, just go to our show page at WNYC.org. Judge Guzman, tell us what happened once you took on these cases and started investigating them thoroughly. Were you skeptical of the stories you heard at first?
Well, yes. I was skeptical and thought that this was just a way to keep Pinochet from continuing as a senator for life. And, I couldn't not study or investigate these cases because they were of assassination, kidnapping, and there were people that had been mentioned as victims. So it was a very, very important case. And
Were you under any pressure not to investigate them?
No, not at all at the moment. And most of my colleagues at the Court of Appeals really said in a funny way, look, how long are you going to be fooling around with these cases? But I realized that was just a point of view and no pressure at all. They had the same hierarchy I had. So.
And what about your family? Did they think that you were doing the right thing?
They trusted me. The people that did not trust me were the people of the government, obviously, that didn't want Pinochet to be tried.
But the government was no longer his government. Was it still protecting him?
Yes. I know that the day of the referendum where Pinochet's government was finally decided to finish, Pinochet didn't want to get out of power. And some of his generals and many of the people that have been in the Concertación, that is the governments that have had the power for the last 18 years, they arrived to an agreement that Pinochet was not ever going to be touched. So then, they couldn't put judges in that agreement. And, I realized that many of the people that tried to pressure me belonged to the Concertación, mostly were Christian Democrats that phoned me and told me, look, how long are you going to continue? Don't indict Pinochet. Remember that we had an agreement that he was supposed to be untouched.
And part of the agreement was he would cede power,
That's
but
right.
he would then have immunity for the rest of his life.
That's right.
And you
that's what the Senator for Life was about. If you're in the Senate, you have legal immunity from prosecution.
And you were really going against this agreement. The deal then had been cut.
That's right.
You wound up traveling all around the country and doing a fair amount of forensic examinations. I don't think there are too many judges in this country who would be looking at the skeletal remains of people who were killed in the 70s and 80s. But that had to – I would imagine there are certain difficulties in doing that. I mean, I know that I might – at times, be very upset. My stomach would get very upset.
No, they were all bones, you know, old bones. I didn't see many fresh bodies. I did see some mummies or mummified bodies in the north where it's rather dry. But the truth is that what startled me or moved me the most to do that was the fact that I realized how much people suffered of not knowing where their relative was and or what had happened to him or her. And then that was why I gave a prior or more importance to searching for the bodies than for any other thing.
For example, in one of the cases, Manuel Donoso, there was an official explanation for his death. His family did not believe it, but there was nothing they could do. You finally resolved the situation for them.
Oh, yes, and I did that in at least 100 cases, you know, opening graves and looking at the body and taking them to the forensic doctors and having their expertise in all these matters.
And as you started turning up more and more evidence of malfeasance, weren't you then putting yourself in danger?
Yes. There was even a situation once I had an operation, and I found out that there were more than 50 policemen in the hospital, and I realized something was happening, and I was told that there was a menace.
A threat?
A threat that I might be killed that day during my operation or after my operation. I was with policemen all the time, even when I was sleeping. I had policemen.
And you wore a bulletproof vest.
I was bulletproofed in some occasions, yes.
Were you surprised by some of these cases? Because some of these people seem to have been killed with very little reason.
With no reason at all. Just because you belonged to the Socialist Party, to the MAPU, to the MID, or you know, to the Socialist Party.
Or you've been a union member.
Sure. Or you've been a union member or a professor or and very much admired by people that were leftists.
In fact, you in one of the investigations, you discovered that a top official of Pinochet's government just targeted intellectuals, people who he felt might cause trouble somewhere down the line.
That's right. That was the Caravana de la Muerte, the Caravan of Death. And that occurred. It was a trip in a helicopter that done by 12 officers that just went to kill prisoners, political prisoners, from south to north. And that had two reasons. First of all, they had to show the soldiers how to act with people that were dangerous for the country. And then they showed them all the brutality. And they said to their fellow soldiers, if you do not do that, you will be considered traitors and you may be treated the same way. And at the same time, this was a terrible act of state terrorism.
In this country, we have had a similar debate over just how far up responsibility is for some of the things that we have seen in recent years. There are people who would like to invite Donald Rumsfeld or Dick Cheney or President Bush, although I think all of that is unlikely. But they all have deniability, and deniability was an issue here as well, wasn't it, Elizabeth?
Yeah, it's very hard. It was very hard, I think. I mean, it's better for Judge Guzman to talk about this, but to tie somebody who's very high in a government like Pinochet to
directly
to
the crimes. Yeah, he didn't say, go kill that woman. Yeah. He never said anything like that, never issued that kind of order, did he?
I don't think so. But he never ordered people that killed others to be tried. He just promoted them. And if somebody was a captain, and he killed, 12 people, 2 years later he would be promoted to be a major, and so on, and without any trial.
So first you're discovering that there are these terrible acts that have occurred all over the country, many, many. When did you realize that you wanted to pin the responsibility on Pinochet and some of the other top officials of his government?
I would say when I investigated Caravana de la Muerte, and I would say that once I realized that it was phony, that the reason of making this trip, killing people, was supposed to be to speed up the cases of people that were arrested. I didn't believe that, and I knew that Pinochet had given a strict order to speeden up the cases. And afterwards, I understood that to speeden up meant to kill people, because that was the order that was executed.
Were you the only judge doing this at the time?
I'll tell you the truth. We had 99 cases, and every case that I had up to the end, I indicted Pinochet, or that was what I thought. I thought he had the responsibility at the end, and the other judges did not indict Pinochet. So I think at the beginning I was the only judge. Afterwards, there's another judge that indicted Pinochet in human rights cases, a judge called Montillo. And there's a judge, Cerda, that indicted Pinochet for the money situation.
Would Elizabeth, do you think that Pinochet would have been okay if the international community hadn't gotten involved, Spain and then England?
It's a very interesting question. I think Judge Guzman should talk about what it meant for Chile that a Spanish judge ordered the arrest of Pinochet in London on because of cases of Spaniards and other people that had been killed in Chile using universal jurisdiction.
And Operation Condor.
And Operation Condor. And he was in under house arrest in London for, 16 months?
And was allowed to leave because the British decided that he was not really physically capable of withstanding.
But I think it had a big effect in Chile.
What happened there? Did it turn the public sentiment against him?
Well, no. All the contrary. He divided more the people. I mean, the situation divided people, became more for Pinochet or against Pinochet. But the truth was that personally, I was going to go do my job as I had to do it, if without or with his arrest in London. But it helped me very much in another sense. If Pinochet wouldn't have been arrested for a year and a half in London, it would have been 100 times much more difficult to indict him and to have him in prison in Chile.
Now, the British said that he was mentally unfit to stand trial, but you decided that he wasn't based on an interview you saw that he had done with the Miami TV station.
Yes.
It was obvious that he was in full control of his faculties.
Well, the first time I indicted him in the year 2000, I was absolutely sure that he was mentally fit. I had no doubt at all. And that year, I indicted him twice. And in 2005, there I had doubts. And I even wrote a decision saying that he was mentally unfit. But my wife that saw my handwriting said, why don't you wait? She's very smart. Why don't you wait for another week to decide? And I said, well, I wanted to get out of this, but if you want me to wait for a week, I'll do so. And my daughter also, one of my daughters asked me the same favor. And it was in that week that I saw the interview of the Cuban journalist, and I realized that Pinochet was absolutely well mentally.
Although he eventually died of natural causes.
Yes.
What about some of the other people involved? For example, the film features an interview, a rather disturbing one, with a man who admits to torturing political prisoners, Oswaldo Roma. There's also Manuel Contreras, who was the head of Pinochet's secret police. Have either of these people been punished?
Yes. Oswaldo Roma was in prison when he died recently, and Manuel Contreras is in prison serving multiple life sentences right now. He'll never get out, the head of the secret police.
Partly because of the cases that you put together?
Yes. He was convicted to the penalty of 7 years of prison for having killed or for having been the intellectual author of Osvaldo Letelier and Ronnie Moffitt's assassination. That was a very low penalty, but he accomplished that penalty.
Now, Chile's current president, Michelle Bachelet, or Bachelet, I don't know why Chile keeps on having these leaders who have E.T. at the end of their names in a Spanish country. Her father was killed under Pinochet, wasn't he?
I think the way they say it is that he was the head of the Air Force, and he was a constitutionalist, and so they took him prisoner, and he was tortured, and he died after being tortured, is sort of the way they put it. He had a heart attack.
Has dealing with Chile's past been a priority under this new administration?
Yes. In all the cases that they were not related to Pinochet. Pinochet was the sacred bone that mustn't be touched. For the other officers and under-officers and soldiers, they have not had any, they haven't pressured judges, and they kind of believe that justice has to be accomplished.
Haven't you retired as a judge?
Yes, I did in 2000.
Was this just too much? Was this just too strenuous?
For my family, yes, it was. For me, not so much, because I liked very much. I think that I found my vocation as a judge. But my family was having a very bad time.
Now, Elizabeth, you filmed this over quite a number of years. You must have heard about Judge Guzman fairly early in the story.
Well, I was doing some stories for the NewsHour in Chile, I remember, in 2000 when Ricardo Lagos, the socialist, was elected president. And it was interesting because he was in the same party as Allende, who had been overthrown, and we were covering it. But I couldn't get an interview with Judge Guzman. He was busy and he was turning down interviews. And I met him by chance, actually, in San Francisco when he spoke at the Center for Latin American Studies at Cal in 2002. And somebody put together a dinner for federal judges and three or four journalists. And I thought then, this is a really interesting person to make a film about. To have a personal transformation occur in the course of a film is pretty unusual.
Well, this is a story of someone who didn't want to believe but then was faced with reality and had two choices, and you obviously made the right choice.
Thank you very much.
But that is something you must think about a lot when you turn that corner. The film The Judge and the General airs on PBS on August 19th at 10 p.m., it'll also be screened tonight at 6:30 at the Film Society of Lincoln Center at West 65th Street, just off of Amsterdam, between Broadway and Amsterdam.
People should check their listings for the August 19th, because some stations run it the 20th, some run it the 21st. But it's the week of August 19th on POV, Point of View, on PBS.
But you're sure to be able to see it if you go to the Walter Reed tonight. And you can find out more information about that on our show page at WNYC.org. It has been my great pleasure to talk to Judge Juan Guzman on our show today, and to Elizabeth Farnsworth, who is the director of The Judge and the General. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Leonard.